listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe. My name is Rob Daly. This is your weekly European football podcast. The Champions League is back. We're going to be talking about that lots, but later on in the programme. So if you're listening to this after the start of the Champions League, don't worry, so much to get through, including Chris Parrott. What else are we talking about this week?
Plenty. Two of Europe's best young guns. One plays in Monaco. The other is the son of a certain UEFA Champions League coach. And we're going to speak about another strop for Mario Balotelli and what that means for his Nice future. And we're also going to speak about Serie A, where all of the top eight won.
We're also going to be discussing Philipp Lahm's retirement, Borussia Dortmund's potential stadium closure of the Yellow Wall, the Zuid Tribune, one of the part of the stadium after recent trouble at games. And we're going to be talking to the Times Spanish football writer Joe Casanelli about lots of issues in Spain, including the title race, but also drugs tests in Spain, which he's been writing a lot about over the past week or so in particular. Chris, you got flu, have you? You got a bit of flu?
Yeah, last week. Hopefully I'm on the turn. I had 3 days sitting on my sofa watching daytime TV, which is
really?
Always, well, didn't want to make you upset, Rob, or fearful for the fact that we'd seen each other, that you'd get it. It always sounds better than it actually is. You're like, brilliant, I'll just watch Premier League years. And then after 15 minutes, you're like, I am bored, and I still feel ill. But anyway, back.
We're working together, aren't we, this week on Champions League?
We
you're
are.
You're going to give me this slurgy, are you?
No, it'll be gone by then. It'll be gone. Mm. That's what my personal GP says.
Do you mean your girlfriend?
girlfriend's parents. Very helpful, actually.
Oh, yeah, that is handy. Okay, well, enough about your impending death. Let's talk about about things in Ligue 1, Chris, because the French title race remains interesting. It looks like Nice have fallen away and will fall away, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But Monaco continued to win, and I saw a fair amount of their stunning weekend performance in Ligue 1, which saw them pick up a big victory, and there's one player everyone's talking about in particular. Do you want to talk about the game very quickly, Chris, and then the nature of the win?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, we shouldn't be surprised because Monaco are just thumping teams left, right and centre, aren't they? And poor old Metz, who they battered earlier on in the season, they beat them 5-0 on Saturday to secure, keep hold of top spot. And as you said, Kylian Mbappe, who is 18, only turned 18 in December, scored a hat-trick to continue his rise into everybody's notebooks and everybody's psyche as perhaps the new Monaco star to look out in a team which has plenty of superstars all about 2021. So they're such an exciting side, but a great day for Mbappe in particular on Saturday.
Yeah, he is a France under-19 international, Mbappe. I mean, we've heard that the new Henry thing before, Chris, in particular with Anthony Martial, who scored all the weekend for Manchester United. Why are they saying this about him?
First of all, because he's coming through that same Monaco career trajectory. Also, I think because of his style of play. He has that quick feet, darting runs. He's elegant, a bit like Henry. He's got terrific vision, like Henry. It's always who's the new Messi. If you're in Argentina or any South American, frankly. But you know, I think the Henry comparisons aren't just because he is French, he is playing for Monaco, but also I think because of his style, and he is sensational to watch. 5'10", as I said, debut in 2015, born in Paris, chose to go to Monaco, and Monaco then fought off quite a lot of opposition last year to pin him down to his first professional contract. I think he's claimed he's a Real Madrid fan and they were interested in signing him, but he didn't want to leave France, which suggests that he might have a cool head on his shoulders, because I can't think of anywhere better to develop than Monaco right now, instead of, you know, sitting in Real Madrid's reserves. And he looks the real deal. He hasn't played that much this season, only made 8 Ligue 1 starts. Scored 7 goals, 3 at the weekend, but he's one of those players who you're just excited when he gets on the ball, and ultimately that's what football's about, isn't it? You know, he's the guy that you want them to pass to. You want him to be running at a fullback or a centre half and see what he can do.
Well, it's funny because I remember sort of before Anthony Martial went to Manchester United, he played a lot in his final season for the Monaco first team. But prior to that, he hadn't played a great deal, and he only scored 9 in his 35 league games before getting that huge transfer to Old Trafford. I just wonder if this is unfair pressure on the player, Chris. Really impressive in that 5-0 win over Met. It's worth noting that Falcao scored a couple and does look very, very good at the moment. But is this unfair on a player to... It just seems to curse you, doesn't it, when someone gives you a tag like this?
It probably is. I think it's the way of the world now that everyone can see a guy who's 18 and scoring goals, can see them on, you know, on social media or on TV now, increasingly. But he is part of an extremely exciting crop of French players. They won the under-19 championship, the European championships in the summer.
He was part of that group.
Yeah, he was part of that group. He is very exciting, and he's been known about for a long time. This isn't a guy who's suddenly come out of nowhere. He's, you know, as I said, plenty of clubs are interested in signing him when he left a small club in Paris, first of all, and Monaco beat off competition. Then they beat off competition to tie him down to his first professional contract because, you know, if you think transfers are a tough game, you know, when players are 25, 26, they're also very tough when people are 16, 17, 18 because everybody wants the best youngsters. So he is known. As I said, he's played nowhere near as much as the likes of Bakayoko, and Bernardo Silva is a bit older now, but he's a hugely exciting prospect. So it probably is a bit unfair. However, there was plenty of talk of Ronaldo and of Messi when they were that age, and maybe that's what makes great players truly great, if they can handle pressure from a very, very young age.
We'll be talking about more promising young footballers later on in the programme. For Paris Saint-Germain, Chris, they played on Friday against Bordeaux to get a 3-0 victory. Was there any help? I mean, they played on Friday and they've got Champions League football coming up. Was there help from anyone with regards to that?
Yeah, it happens every week. I'm sure Premier League clubs would look at the FA and the Premier League and with mouths open. But yeah, I mean, the French Football Federation and Ligue 1 want Paris Saint-Germain to be successful. Of course they do, for the French coefficient. Particularly with the changes in the laws, being in that top four league bracket is going to be vital in terms of how many Champions League places you get. So Paris Saint-Germain are France's hopes for that, because the top four leagues will get 4 places from the start of the 2018-19 season. One season after that. So it's very important for Paris Saint-Germain to do well. And they were actually impressive, maybe one of the most impressive certainly in recent months against Bordeaux. They won 3-0. Draxler started on the bench. He'll start against Barcelona in the Champions League. Di Maria was impressive. And Cavani scored the other two, Di Maria with one of Paris's goals. So good weekend for Paris Saint-Germain. They needed to win. I think they know that Monaco are going to win most weeks. So the pressure is on every time they play.
Very exciting. Paris Saint-Germain with that victory to stay within touching distance of Monaco. Let's talk about Memphis Depay and Dimitri Payet, Chris. How have they been getting on?
Yeah, well, they both had disappointing weekends in terms of the result. One thing I forgot to say about Paris Saint-Germain, interesting stuff in L'Equipe. They think that Draxler's arrival has revitalised Di Maria, particularly after that performance against Bordeaux. And they're wondering, as of last week, you would have said it would be Lucas, Draxler and Cavani, but they think that Di Maria might start against Barcelona. Ahead of Lucas Moura, or at least it will be very close. So maybe Di Maria is reacting in the right way to Draxler coming in, which was, I'm sure, one of the reasons that Patrick Kluivert bought Julian Draxler, as well as the fact he's a very good player. But yeah, so Memphis, welcome to Ligue 1. Lyon were beaten by Guingamp, this not a tiny team, but from a tiny town in Brittany. He started on the bench, came on. Lyon took the lead and Guingamp won. As they love to shock the big boys of French football. So if Memphis Depay didn't know what Ligue 1 was all about, he will do this Monday morning. And Dimitri Payet and Marseille were also beaten 3-2 away at Nantes. Bafétimbi Gomis got a couple of goals for Marseille, but they're pretty poor away from home. 3 defeats in a row. Now, Payet did play the 90 minutes at least.
Yeah, both players actually scored in the week as well in domestic action. Dimitri Payet with the deflected free kick and Depay in a 4-0 win over Nancy, but... Disappointing weekends for them. Okay, so Balotelli, Chris, what's the latest with him?
It was all going so well. And then, as Mario Balotelli often seems to, things start to come apart. it all started before their 2-2 draw with Rennes at the weekend, when Valentin Esserek came out and he said this, quite strong quotes. "He lets his head drop and he looks like he wants nothing to do with us," said his teammate. He said he should think a bit more about the collective and work a bit harder for us. "It's a shame he has this tendency to grumble when things don't go his way." Where have we heard that before? He was then left out against Rennes officially due to flu symptoms. Now, I can't say anything, given I had some time off work last week with flu. Maybe he did. Reports, as ever with Balotelli, after those quotes, that mean that he had been dropped. He may well have had flu. But afterwards, Esserek then did another interview with BN Sports where he said, "I told the truth. It's a shame he lets his head drop. You see him in training every day. He's such a great player."
It's so, the same old story, isn't it?
It is the same old story, absolutely. And you hope that he recovers from this. And, you know, Nice have gone through a slightly sticky patch. But, hey, they're still third. They're still well on course for a Champions League place. Oh, come on, Balotelli. You know, we've been here before so many times. And if he can't work hard at Nice and make it work, then you do really wonder where he's going to go. Probably China in the summer. But, you know, it's disappointing. It was a bad day for Nice as well. Alassane Player limped off with an injury, one of their vital players. But
so they're going to need him. I mean, that's a striker. They need him to get his act.
Exactly. They do. Yeah, so anyway, I mean, maybe he'll have that first defence stuff and he'll be okay for the next game. But
oh, yeah, we got loads of messages about the old first defence. I need some now, actually. Oh, we need to. This podcast is just turning to Sick and Chris and Rob. You can actually hear it in my voice a little bit as well.
It's February, though, so it's natural. Let's move
prime
to
time.
Prime let's move time. On. Let's move. Oh, I was going to say let's move to a hot country, but let's move on as well.
Speaking of hot countries, Italy, Serie A, Giovanni Simeone, son of Diego. And what an impressive season he is having, Chris. Linked with AC Milan in recent days.
Yeah, 10 league goals already. 21, started off at River Plate. Genoa signed him in the summer and then bought the remaining 35% of him. One of those strange transfers that often happens in Serie A. They bought that this month and they did that because there is loads of interest. Villarreal were reportedly ready to make a bid. Rumours that Milan have agreed a summer deal with him. I'm not sure about that. The Genoa president, Enrico Preziosi, I hope I've pronounced that, said AC Milan can't afford the 30 million it would take to sign Giovanni Simeone. So already the tug of war has started. I just wonder whether he'd want. It'd be fascinating, given how Diego Simeone has so many times professed his love for Inter, and all the rumours that when he leaves Atletico he might go to Inter. If his son was playing for Milan, that'd be a great derby, wouldn't it?
Do you know, if I was Giovanni, I don't know if I'd want to play for my dad if he was Diego Simeone.
No,
I just feel like
not.
He'd overcompensate by being extra tough on you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and maybe playing for Montella at San Siro would be a better option. But yeah,
reverse Steve and Alex Bruce. Is what I'm thinking.
Yes, very similar.
Well, that looks like a great bit of business for Genoa. Regardless of the weekend, they were beaten 2-0 by Napoli, a good result for Napoli there as well. Inter beat Empoli by 2-0. Joe Hart conceded 3, but Torino scored 5 in a 5-3 win over Pescara. And it was a good weekend, really, for the whole top half of the table almost in Italy. Chris, things didn't change too much.
No, the top 8 all won. And I think now with the live league table, the top 11 teams in Serie A all won at the weekend. Higuain got a brace at Cagliari. They also won in midweek, did Juve. Roma beats Crotone away. Dzeko missed a penalty. Not
I saw
his first
that penalty. It was woeful.
It was. And he said he might take himself off them in the future. We'll wait and see. Mo Salah was great after coming back.
Yeah,
from
can I? I saw about 40 minutes of this game of the weekend. And I wanted to talk about Mo Salah because he was a player I was raving about. Especially he hit that season at Basel when they went flying in the Europa League. And I just feel like if he hadn't had that spell at Chelsea, he would be being linked to the Premier League clubs for 40 million quid, wouldn't he? You look at his goals and assists this season. I think he's got 8 goals in 16 league games, so one every other game for a winger's pretty good. And then he has 4 or 5 assists. I think 5 assists now.
And maybe had he gone to Chelsea at a different time as well. You know, different managers have different opinions, don't they? And he is a very, very good player. I mean, he's one of the best players in Serie A. You know, as you said, he definitely would be linked. But maybe it's good. Just play for Roma. keep banging in the goals.
No,
there.
He should stay there. I mean, he's going to be playing every week. He's going to be playing in the Champions League. He's going to be getting. I just wonder if he's not as a. And he had the great African Cup of Nations as well. I just wonder if he's a touch underappreciated sometimes, but
yeah, definitely. I think you could probably say the same about Juan Cuadrado as well. I think Salah's better than Cuadrado, definitely. But I think both of them are probably seen in England as all those guys who weren't good enough for Chelsea. That they may well have been, but football has a funny way of, you know, you can go through a litany of players who have not made it at one club, but then have gone on to forge brilliant careers.
True. Yeah, well, you've got 2-0 win over Cagliari at the weekend as well. Higuain scored. On a couple of occasions. He's on fire at the moment, Higuain, as we head into the round of 16 in the Champions League. I did see that they've sold Hernanez, is that right, to the Chinese Super League?
Yeah, the Chinese transfer window doesn't shut until the end of the month.
Okay, so they can still bring in players from Europe. Do you want to just explain that a little bit?
Yeah, they can. And Fabio Cannavaro, who's out there, as Nikola Kalinic has been heavily linked. I loved his quote. He said, "I'm not worth that much money."
How much are they saying? Didn't they say 50 million euros or something?
Yeah, 45 million quid, something like that. But it was a great quote.
You're not worth that, Nicola.
No, but he knows that himself. But he says, Cannavaro said the Chinese transfer window is open and he remains our first choice. So for clubs like Fiorentina to have to go through another couple of weeks of thinking, well, who's our squad going to be? But yeah, I mean, but if you're China, why would you have the same transfer window as European clubs? You know, there's no reason for that at all. So, you know, do have it open by another month.
It's an opportunity for European clubs, isn't it? I know that in China they're looking to that it's been seen as grotesque, some of the fees that are being spent on to bring players, and they're trying to limit the number of foreign players doing the rounds. But it's an opportunity for European clubs anyway to offload players. Manuel Pellegrini, the manager, to sign Hernanez as well, bringing him to Hebei China Fortune. Let's talk Spanish football now. Earlier, I caught up with the Times Spanish football writer, Joe Casanelli.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
Okay, joining us on the show now is Spanish football writer for the Times. It's Joseph Casanelli. Joseph, thanks for coming on the show.
No worries, Rob.
It's great to have you on as always, Joe. And we are going to talk about the La Liga title race, which is throwing up surprises throughout the course of the season. But let's talk about drugs tests in Spanish football, which you've been writing a lot about in the Times over the past few days. People should go read your stuff on this. Before we get into the nitty-gritty, do you just want to break down the exact issue with drugs tests in Spain over the past 12 months?
Yeah, well, I'll try not to make it sort of too mundane and boring for the listeners. Basically, in 2015, WADA, which is the World Anti-Doping Authority, changed their code and said that all member associations of WADA needed to change their doping laws to be in accordance with WADA's new code. And then in November of 2015, they released a list of 7 countries who were found to have not changed their law in accordance with the code, and they gave them all sort of due warning until the next WADA board meeting in March of 2016 to get it changed. All bar 2 did. One of them was Spain and the other one was Mexico. And therefore, as a result of this, APSAD, which is Spain's anti-doping authority, had their accreditation revoked by WADA. In essence, they couldn't do any WADA-accredited drugs testing. This therefore has a knock-on effect in sport, which means that, much like in the UK, where the UK Anti-Doping Authority conducts the drugs tests on behalf of the Premier League, APSAD conduct drugs tests on behalf of La Liga. Therefore, between March of last year and today, every drugs test that Apeshead have conducted on behalf of La Liga has been invalid because they don't have an accreditation from WADA in order to be able to conduct a drugs test. So therefore, if they would have found anything out, there actually wouldn't have been anything they could have done because they have no authority on the subject. It sounds very complicated. However, it essentially means that all drugs tests in Spain since March 2016 have been null and void in La Liga. However, it must be said that teams who play in European competitions do get separate drugs tests by UEFA. They get two players tested per game after every game, and UEFA can conduct surprise visits in which up to 10 players can be tested at a time. However, that also does leave sort of 15 other teams in La Liga who have been, over the past 12 months, not tested. And even more remarkable than that, I would say, is despite this whole shenanigans of the fact that they've not been able to conduct any valid drug tests, the Spain's anti-doping authority released a statement last week to sort of try and absolve themselves from blame, in which they said, you know, we asked FIFA and UEFA to help us out. They said no because it doesn't fall under their jurisdiction, which I think is very much fair enough. However, they also said, yeah, but anyway, we've tested 57 players this La Liga season, so what's the problem? And my problem with that is that 57 players, so if you consider a match day squad is 18 players, a first team squad is 25 players, and there are 20 teams in the league, out of those thousands of players, they've tested 57 thus far in the La Liga season. That was before this weekend. I don't know whether this weekend they went and tested every player because, to make a point, that I don't know, but 57 players in what's been in what's gone so far this season. To put that into context, as we revealed in the Times in the 2014-15 season, is that 366 Premier League players were tested during that season. So that was 2 years ago. And that was a number that one leading anti-doping authority deemed as pathetic. So I'd like to know what they had to say about 57 players this year.
Okay. So A, the tests are invalid over the past year. B, they're barely doing any tests. What does this tell us about Spanish football's intention to properly test their players?
Well, Spanish football, La Liga have kind of sort of said nothing to see here. It's not our fault. This is Spain anti-doping's problem, which, you know, is again book passing of the finest, sort of at its finest, really. You need to say that it's not just happened. WADA's statement when these media reports came out said that it's also happened in other sports. So I don't necessarily think you can just nail it down to Spanish football, rather Spain as a society as a whole. You know, you've got to look at the fact that the Operation Puerto case, which for those of who don't know was a sort of a disgraced doctor called Eufemiano Fuentes, who a few years ago was arrested in an anti-doping raid and 211 frozen blood bags were seized from him, and that was for blood doping. And when it was all taken to court, a Spanish judge ordered the blood bags to be destroyed. So there could be no testing done on the blood bags to find out whose blood it was, to find out who was doping. Spain's handling of that was one of the key contributory factors in their Madrid 2020 Olympic bid failing, because the Olympics aren't going to give, you know, the IOC aren't going to give the Olympics to a city or a country who are seen to have a doping problem. So therefore, Spain as a whole has a very casual attitude towards it. The day after all this happened, in Marca, there was one paragraph on the entire subject of about six lines, just saying, oh yeah, by the way, 0.003% of all La Liga players have been tested this season. But aren't Real Madrid great, or aren't Barcelona great?
So is there no real prerogative for the press to highlight the issue, because maybe, historically, it's an issue that people don't want a torch shined on?
Yes, I think that's pretty much spot on. You remember that Samir Nasri was pictured at an intravenous therapy clinic?
Oh, yeah, what happened with that?
Well, exactly.
I forgot about that.
No update has been provided since the Spanish doping authority said they were going to look into it. What, we're now sort of midway through February and nothing's happened. That happened in December. You'd assume if there was any wrongdoing, and must stress there is no accusations of wrongdoing, that anything that could have happened would now be out of his system anyway, and therefore would be impossible to prove. But, you know, Jorge Sampaoli's press conferences weren't, you know, they weren't dominated by questions on what's going on here, what's happened here. When this story broke the next day in the newspaper, you know, the next day at all the press conferences, Luis Enrique, Diego Simeone, Zinedine Zidane et al. Weren't bombarded with questions about it. In fact, I don't think they were even asked about it. And therefore, it's a historical thing of Spain. And because it's only very recently that doping and being in possession of performance-enhancing drugs actually became illegal in Spain. You know, there's a reason Lance Armstrong had his base in Girona, close to Barcelona, in Spain for so many years. So it's more a problem of Spain's historical, sort of Spain's history with sport, and the fact that they are seen as a soft touch on doping in sport. Their anti-doping authority have tried to sort of shed this image, but stories like these really don't help when you're trying to shed that image. And to add it, and to sort of, you know, put a final spanner in the works, WADA did remind the world that while they suspended the Spanish anti-doping authority's accreditation, and they also therefore meant that the principal laboratory, which is in Madrid, had its accreditation suspended, Spain does have a lab in Barcelona, which is still allowed to conduct drugs tests on behalf of WADA, and they would all be valid. And therefore, the Spanish La Liga could have come to some sort of arrangement with WADA to send their drugs tests to Barcelona to be tested, but for some reason they didn't do that, whether that's politics or policy, you don't know. So there's, you know, it just basically seems that they could have probably done something about it, decided not to, and then just decided to brush it all under the carpet. The new Spanish government, which was another reason cited for them not being able to change a doping law, Spanish doping authority said, well, we've not had a government for 10 months. We couldn't change the law. They've had almost 4 months since the new government has been in power, and they've not even looked to change the law. However, hopefully now this news story will force their hand and they will make a new law and become WADA compliant.
Okay, we're going to have to get you back on to talk about this further, Joe, over the course of the season. Very interesting indeed. Let's talk about the La Liga title race. I'll only ask you a couple on this one, but first of all, let's talk about Atletico's form and the stunning goal seen by Fernando Torres, scored by Fernando Torres at the weekend in their 3-2 victory.
Yeah, I thought I'd got in a time machine and gone back to 2008 when Torres did that, because it's one of those things where, you know, the question surrounding Fernando Torres' career, I think now, is, was his time between 2007 and 2009, was that the actual blip in his career, rather than is he that amazing player who has just had a couple of bad years, loss of form, loss of confidence? But that goal is, it reminds me of a goal he scored for Liverpool against Blackburn in 2000, in his first season in the Premier League, where he sort of chested the ball down, swiveled, sort of hooked it over his shoulder into the far corner of the goalkeeper. And for any listener who's not seen this goal, you really do need to go onto YouTube or wherever and just and search Torres against Celta Vigo, because it's one of the best goals they've ever seen scored live. It was an incredible goal for Fernando Torres. And in recent weeks, you have to say that he's really come good. And I don't know whether he's just feeling the benefit of a winter break, or whether, you know, to be cynical, it's February, his contract's up at the end of the season, and he knows if he wants to stay at Atletico for another year, he might have to actually start upping his game. But either way, it was just an absolutely wonderful goal. And, you know, Torres's confidence is sky high. But that was also reflected in the fact he, when Yannick Carrasco won a penalty, he grabbed the ball off Carrasco and then proceeded to miss the penalty. So, you know, while Torres sort of looked back, you know, it sort of returned to the Fernando we've all come to know and love over the years as well.
Two goals in the final 4 minutes won it for Atletico, 3-2 against Celta Vigo. Carrasco and Griezmann sealing the victory. A sensational dramatic victory for Atletico, who are conceding a lot more goals this season. Real Madrid got a 3-1 win at Osasuna, and Gareth Bale's back in training and just in time for the Champions League, Joe, because you're going to the Napoli game. What's your feeling on Real Madrid-Napoli?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, actually, because Napoli, I believe, I mean, I don't watch them every week, but I believe they are 18 games undefeated in all competitions. So they're on the kind of roll that Real Madrid found themselves on earlier this season. Real Madrid went to Osasuna, bottom of the league, Osasuna, at the weekend, and they really had to dig deep and scrape a 3-1 win, which was sort of made to look a lot more comfortable than it was with the fact that they scored the last kick of the game to make it 3-1. At 2-1, they were clinging on at times and sort of indebted to Keylor Navas for a few good saves. But Real Madrid, you know, the Champions League seems to bring the best out of Real Madrid. I don't think finishing second in their group was actually the worst result they could have had, given the way that the other groups panned out. You know, for example, Bayern Munich came second, so if Real Madrid had won the group, there was a chance they could have drawn Bayern Munich. Whereas Napoli was sort of seen in Spain as one of the better draws that they could get. But if you're playing against a team that are 18 matches undefeated, you're always going to have to be wary. And I'm sure Zinedine Zidane will say that in his press conferences tomorrow. However, I just think that Real Madrid, being Real Madrid, this being the European Cup, I do think that they must be massive favourites going into it and will up their game in time to see off Napoli.
Barcelona go to Paris Saint-Germain after it. They won 6-0 at Deportivo Alaves. Nasty injury. I mean, Lionel Messi got on the score sheet. Suarez got on the score sheet. Neymar too. But one of the standout things was an injury to Alex Vidal, who, Joseph, I had to say, I'm impressed with how he has fought his way back into the Barcelona team. And it's sad now that he's going to be out. What are they saying for the season? What is the injury exactly?
Yeah, well, Barcelona released a medical statement on Saturday night, which said that he'd suffered a dislocated ankle, which looked as nasty as it sounds, really. Watching it live, you saw sort of his ankle pointing one way and his leg pointing the other. It was really not nice. As you say, he's fought his way back from the brink, sort of, you know, a Barcelona exile, essentially, to become part of the squad. And, you know, kudos to him for that. And he's done very, very well to force his way back in. He's, you know, he's probably never going to, he would never be a starter. You know, he's been playing right back when Sergio Roberto needs a rest. However, for someone who'd fought so hard to be part of the first team squad, it is just a horrible, massive blow to him. And yeah, it looks like he's going to miss the next 5 months, which would see him out, you know, until the summer. And Barcelona, you know, if it was Messi, Neymar, Suarez, you know, if you're out for 5 months, they will happily wait for you to come back. I'm not sure if his Barcelona career will ever recover from it. And there might be the fact that he's out for a few months, he gets his fitness back, and then he might be moved on loan in the summer to kind of resurrect his career. Because after being out for so long, you know, both in terms of he signed for Barcelona when they had a transfer ban, he then never played for them. He's now only just started playing, but he's now going to have another 3-5 months out. For his career, he might actually need to move on from this to a new club to make a fresh start, to kind of kickstart it again.
Agree. Joseph, thank you so much for joining us on the show, as always. And will you keep us up to date with the latest on that drug story from Spain?
Yeah, will do, Rob. No worries.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
Great to catch up with Joe Castanelli, as always. One of our favourites on Football in Europe. Chris, very interesting hearing him talk about the drugs tests in Spain for players.
Yeah, very much so. I've been fascinating following him this week, going through that. And I couldn't help but think I am a cycling fan, always have been. And if that was a cycling team or nation or rider, everybody would cry foul immediately. And that annoys me sometimes, that other sports seem to get away with it. It's like, oh, cycling, they're all on whatever. Yeah, they probably are. It's because they're cycling 7 hours a day up a hill. But the fact that football, I think, gets an easier ride, and as Joe said, then for it to be a marker as a, you know, a tiny couple of paragraphs, it doesn't suggest that the press take it particularly seriously, which is probably why this whole thing has has happened in the first place.
Okay, so Joe is well worth a follow on Twitter, and we'll tweet his handle out as well to follow. Chris, enough about Spanish football. Should we talk about Germany?
Yeah, let's, because was this the weekend that Bayern wrapped up the title?
Yeah, probably was, because interestingly, teams in, and I saw this from Archie Rintat on Twitter, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth and seventh all lost. Now, it's something we've talked about, that Bayern aren't that much better than teams, I don't think, in the league, but other teams keep on throwing away games needlessly, and Bayern still have that ruthless touch, shown by getting two goals in the final moments of their game against Ingolstadt. Their another Bavarian club beat them 2-0 at the weekend, Vidal and Robben with the goals. And it's going to be very hard, because it seems the rest of the league is intent on chucking away any kind of title challenge. RB Leipzig shouldn't really having to be the main contenders to Bayern. Hoffenheim shouldn't. Frankfurt shouldn't. There's much bigger clubs with bigger budgets and better players who should be putting pressure on Bayern. And Dortmund's failings, you know, all the more evident by a weekend defeat at Darmstadt, where, you know, Darmstadt bottom of the table under new head coach Torsten Frings, a former Germany international. You know, very poor defensively. And Thomas Tuchel said something very damning about it. It was a game that showed the character of his team, or something along those lines. So, I mean, look, that team is young, and that fundamentally is a massive issue. They recently announced that Ömer Toprak will be joining from Bayer Leverkusen, and that will be a bit of experience at centre-back. And God knows they need it, because the defending for some of the Darmstadt goals was absolutely terrible, especially the goal from Terence Boyd, the American international. So lots of work for Borussia Dortmund to do in a week when the German Football Association effectively announced their intention to close the Sud Tribune, the yellow wall, for one game. Do you think that's a smart move, Chris, after some of the there was violent instances during the after and during and before the RB Leipzig game, and some of the banners were particularly offensive?
Yeah, I think you have to, when it was, as you said, you used that, you know, violent skirmishes outside is one thing that normally comes under the police's legislation. But when it's inside the ground, something has to be done. It would be a big blow to Dortmund. It's a big thing to shut. Well, it's not just one stand, is it? It's it must be about a third of their entire capacity, because it's such a big stand as we see and we love. But things did go way over the top, so I'm not surprised at that. I had a look at the table, Rob. So Bayern are top with 49 points. Dortmund are fourth with 34. So they're 15 points behind. They're only 15 points above fourth bottom Hamburg.
Oh wow! Well,
you know, it's yeah. You know, we've talked about you know, these great stories, Leipzig and Hoffenheim and Hertha and Eintracht Frankfurt, because of the fact that no one's really winning. The likes of Leverkusen and Gladbach and Schalke, if they went on a great run, they could still comfortably finish in the top four.
There's no guarantees Dortmund will get in the Champions League by any means, and you know, it hasn't been a great few days for them, despite recently beating RB Leipzig and getting through in the cup. You know, Thomas Tuchel has been linked with Arsenal this week, I think more because of, you know, the rumours about Wenger's future, about whether he will leave. Aubameyang recently said he wants to go play in Spain. Tuchel said that wasn't particularly helpful either. They've had this issue with the fans. Meanwhile, a number of fans, hooligans, were stopped on their way to the Darmstadt game and found to have fireworks, flares, smoke bombs, balaclavas. Police posted a picture of that. So, you know, not a great week for Borussia Dortmund. They need to sort of regroup and focus, because they've got a big few weeks on in terms of maintaining their challenge to get in the Champions League again, because they're out of the title race. And not only that, but to stay in contention to win the Champions League and the German Cup. So, interesting times. But Philipp Lahm, Chris, do you want to talk about Philipp Lahm?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about, to announce his retirement, or he will retire at the end of the season. We're talking about an all-time great here, aren't we? In 10, 20 years, you'll look back on great European players, and Philipp Lahm will probably be in that. If you had to make a team of great players, he'd probably be your fullback, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And I think certainly, you know, if someone was to compile an all-time great German 11, you know, how many players would really challenge him at right back? A captain who won the World Cup, 113 caps for his country, 502 appearances for Bayern so far. He's only 33, but it's interesting because there was a bit of surprise about the timing of the announcement, not the announcement itself. And I remember reading some stuff, an interview from him earlier in the season, saying that, you know, they were asking, he seems like he would be the ideal head coach, an ideal manager, doesn't he? Sort of a thinking, versatile footballer. And he said, he spoke about how the idea of the drain of going back into a training ground every day was a real reason why he wouldn't go into coaching. And I almost took that as he sounds a bit sick of it already. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, the quotes from Pep Guardiola were amazing. He was always very complimentary of Lahm, who said that even when he was in Munich, that he was the most intelligent player he's ever worked with. And he said Lahm could still continue. He says, Guardiola says he's one of the best players ever who could play in 10 positions. Pep probably exaggerating a little bit there, but Pep probably sees 40 positions on a football field as opposed to the 8 or 9 everyone else can see.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Only 33. He had that loan at Stuttgart as a kid as well, so he wasn't quite a one club man, but I'm sure...
Sporting director, though. Can you, you know, this... And Bayern have always been very good, haven't they, about, you know, great players going back to the club. So maybe Lahm has a break, does a bit of media work, and then realises that he does miss aspects of it. I'd be shocked if we don't see him either with the DFB in some job there in terms of the German national team or back at Bayern. But as you said, he's 33, so he's not going to go into coaching yet. But maybe he goes into the business side or the political side of football.
Yeah, Rafa Honigstein, I saw on BT on Sunday night, was saying that apparently he was interested in a role on the board of directors already, but not to be sporting director. And the club felt that because he hadn't had any kind of administrative experience, that was too soon for him. I think Max Eberl, the sporting director at Gladbach, will be the next sporting director of Bayern. So I think that's probably, I wonder if Lahm will be the guy. You know, Bayern are always thinking ahead in that respect.
Yeah.
And I think they're probably thinking maybe Lahm will be the guy after that, depending on... And you're right, he's a very good talker. I didn't even really think about his media prospects, but I'm sure a TV channel, much like signed up Gary Neville pretty rapidly, would be interested in taking Lahm. Can I just read out some highlights of the weekend? Because we had lots of him from Germany in particular this weekend, Chris. Ramsey Clark really enjoyed Hamburg's win at Leipzig. Worth noting as well, as was correctly pointed out by Sonny on Twitter, Kyriakos Papadopoulos has turned into Alan Shearer for Hamburg, reference to the fact he's a centre-back wearing number 9 as well. In the last two games, he has proper celebrated scoring against two of his former clubs. He got a goal against Leverkusen and did that knee slide. He's on loan from Leverkusen, and he had an unsuccessful loan at RB Leipzig this season and scored against them in a 3-0 win for Hamburg at Leipzig, who've lost 4 of the last 7 in the league. What other highlights do we have from Germany? Brian says he's a Frankfurt fan, more like a low point. Bayer Leverkusen 3, Frankfurt 0. Right in time as well for a team shifting focus from the Bundesliga to the Champions League, because Leverkusen do take on Atletico. So thank you very much to everyone for your tweets in this week as well. Chris, a quick one from the Eredivisie. All of the top 3-1, including Feyenoord, who beat Groningen 2-0. Ajax beat Sparta Rotterdam 2-0, and PSV, with Marco van Hinkel on the score sheet again, beat Utrecht. He scored 3-5 on loan from Chelsea. He scored 8-13 last season. Really, really underrated player, probably. Okay, so Chris, Champions League. So we talked about Barcelona and Madrid with Joe. Bayern Arsenal.
Yes, indeed. Again.
Again.
When the draw was made, I thought this might be Arsenal's best opportunity. I didn't think they were going to beat Bayern necessarily. But since then, I think Bayern have improved, and I think Arsenal have gone backwards, or they certainly haven't taken a step forward. They do have Granit Xhaka available, of course. I'm not convinced by him at all, in all honesty.
Are you not?
Nope. I don't think he's... I think he's good enough for a side who are going to finish fourth, fifth or sixth, which is where Arsenal are going to finish, in my opinion. But I don't think he's good enough to win the Champions League or win the Premier League. Not yet, anyway. He's only been 6 months in a new country, in a new league. But I don't think he's that man for Arsenal. Fascinated to see what happens. I think first and foremost, Arsenal have to believe that they can beat Bayern. And I'm not convinced they do. I hope they do. And they're going to need Ozil to have one of his games. He's been disappointing recently. And of course, they're going to need Alexis Sanchez to do something magical as well, which he is well capable of doing. But first and foremost, I think Arsenal have to believe they can beat Bayern. And we'll see if they do once it kicks off at the Allianz.
Yeah, I mean, normally Arsenal end up playing the first leg at home and then losing. That tends to yes. have been what happened. At least they're away first this time, so they can get that. I mean, Bayern haven't been great. They really had to grind out their win over Ingolstadt, who've struggled this season. Benfica take on Borussia Dortmund at the weekend. We've just mentioned Dortmund there, Chris, as well. An opportunity for Benfica, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, another one that when the draw was made, you sort of thought, OK, it's a great draw for Dortmund. But now you think from Benfica's point of view, they made the quarters last year, lost to Bayern narrowly. I think they will. They're having an excellent season domestically. They've got some very, very good players as well. And I think, you know, they'll be looking, as you said, you know, Dortmund have just been beaten by Darmstadt. Did they have one eye on the Champions League? I'm not sure.
Gladbach take on Fiorentina in the Europa League. Villarreal face Roma. They're two of the more glamorous ties in the Europa League round of 32 this year. Spurs go to Ghent in Belgium. But United Saint-Etienne might be the standout tie, Chris. You cover United and watch a fair bit of French football as well. It's a meeting of Pogba brothers, two of them, in Paul and Florentin as well. So Saint-Etienne with a 4-0 win over Lorient at the weekend, their biggest victory of the season. How do you see this tie going?
Well, and actually, Pogba was in L'Equipe's team of the week, which is a good opening to this. United are favourites. I think they're beginning to click, and I think they're taking the Europa League very seriously. Jose Mourinho's won it before. I think he'd love to win it again with United, the only European competition they haven't won. I think Saint-Étienne will be tough. I think particularly at home, it's such a wonderful stadium. We saw the atmosphere when they beat Lyon there. A couple of weeks ago. Absolutely. It's one of the best football stadiums in Europe. So I think United need to win the home leg. And, you know, I'm sure they'd like to keep a clean sheet and not have to worry about the away goal. But that should be a good one. And for all Spurs fans, if you're going to Belgium, just enjoy Ghent. It's an absolute peach of a place. They're having a pretty ordinary season. They lost to Eupen. They're eighth in Belgium. So enjoy the canals and the rather strong Belgian beer. Because that is a great away trip.
It is a good one. Chris, I think that's all we have time for. You need to go. I need to go. Any final words ahead of a big Champions League week?
We're back. And the fact that it's two games a night means that... Was this the quick answer you wanted?
That's good. This is good.
Four out of the next 5 weeks are Champions League weeks, kids.
And you can listen to me and Chris on the... Champions League radio show, which is available on UEFA.com, on the app. And if for some reason you're listening to this show from Canada, TSM Radio 1410.
yep.
And it's all live commentary and all that stuff. So
all that stuff. And you actually, you don't just hear from us, do you? Hear from the biggest names, the biggest stars.
Cavani. Who else we got on this week? Cavani. Oh,
Cahill. Zidane. Also, I know we've spoken about it, but 10,000 Napoli fans in Madrid. Whoo! Bad week if you're just taking your girlfriend there for a Valentine's trip to Madrid and you find out that there's a match on.
Yeah, that's very true. That's the way to do it. That's the way to get them. All right, Chris, we're done. I'll speak to you later in the week.
See you later.
If you want to leave us a review on iTunes, please do. And tweet us at FIE Podcast.
This is Football in Europe.